This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome to Conversations with Toy, a podcast tackling life one episode at a time. This is the time to air out life's craziest moments. This space is all about speaking about life's hang-ups and ways in which we can leave better than when we started. Topics are all about ways we can find space to be better in life, love, mental space, and health.
Happy Friday. I hope that you have had the most amazing week. If this is your first time tuning into Conversations with Toy, thank you. Get comfortable. This is a space where I will talk about mental health and wellness, the things that I'm seeing on these internet streets, and everything else in between. And listen, I know that this is not a mistake that you just happened to stumble upon this podcast. There's something in this podcast that you needed to hear. And this is 12th season. This is the 12th season. So there's plenty, and I do mean plenty, of podcast episodes that have different guests that talk about different topics, from being married, single, with children, without children. You can be your very best self while you're listening to this podcast, whether you're listening to it while you're working out, whether you're listening to it while you're folding clothes. I am here to just bring the conversations to the forefront and to talk about some things that people may want to shy away from, especially when we're talking about mental health and wellness. Let me just preface, I am not a mental health professional. I am a mental health advocate. So therefore, I want you to make sure that you just keep that in mind when we're listening. A lot of the conversations are going to come from people who are on the podcast, who are talking about their personal experiences and as well as mine. I learn from my personal experiences and experiences that I've seen that have been around me. Some failures, yes. Some triumphs, yes. But all of it is to help you. And that is a blessing, okay? So without any further ado, welcome to the podcast. I am also not just a podcaster. I am a content creator. I am a blogger of Toitime. That is TOITIME.org. I am also a writer. So I do a lot of freelance writers. You may have seen some of my articles and different publications, including What to Expect When You're Expecting. Yes, I talk about my postpartum depression, which started this entire journey. This is going into my 11th year as a writer, and I started writing from dealing with postpartum depression. Who would have thunk that something so dark, and I do mean dark, if you've ever been through postpartum, you know that fourth trimester is a lot. And so who would have thunk that the trauma that I had went through with that fourth trimester, as known as postpartum, and the tears and the isolation and feeling like I'm alone, all those things that could have happened. And look how years later, it turned into a business. It turned into encouraging others. It turned into me getting into the rooms of some amazing places to talk about how we are going to help mothers and Black maternal health. I don't take that for light. Lightly at all, because gosh, that is a blessing to be able to say. I didn't even really consider it until now. Like, I'm hearing myself say it and I'm like, you know what? Thank you, God. Cause let me tell you, when you're in that fourth trimester and you're in the trenches, like, dealing with your own emotions, dealing with this new baby, it can be a lot. And I'm telling you, my children, I love them. I have three. I'm a mother. I'm also a wife. But my three beautiful children, I love them. I just love them to life. And so if you are dealing with something that may seem dark today, I'm a living, literal living witness that it can turn around for your good down the line. So if you are being discouraged by something you feel like you continuously struggle with and you don't seem like it's just not getting any better, please hold on tight. Tie a knot and hold on tighter, because it can and it will turn. It may not feel that way when I was in there changing them diapers, when it seemed like everybody had a life and I was in the struggle mode, just trying to, you know, have some type of an adult interaction, but I was deep in the Caillou and Barney and Dora the Explorer. But here I am today with kids that are well in age. They got one that's about to transition to an adulthood soon. Yeah, it will, and it can, and it will turn. It may take a minute, but it can and it will. And a lot of things that we go through, regardless of where you are in life, does in some way become a testimony. Listen, I am a PK, a preacher's kid. Both my parents were preachers. And so it's never going to leave me. It's always going to be with me, right? And I remember, you know, when you share your testimony, and your testimony is your story, like share your story. And we're so used to people saying, don't tell nobody, don't tell nobody, don't tell nobody. That's something that happens usually in a Black household. But here's the thing. If the people in that household wasn't doing nothing they had no business doing, you wouldn't be worrying about nobody telling the business in the first place. Okay? That's number one. But number two, telling and sharing your testimony encourages someone else that when they're at their lowest point, they say, Lord, if you can do it for her, do it for me. Or I see it work out for her, it can work out for me. And let me just tell you, I was dealing with like postpartum psychosis, which is almost the worst part of postpartum. It's like postpartum times two. And feeling alone with a house full of people, but feeling isolated. There's no feeling greater or worse, I should say, than that. And, but I'm here. I'm blessed to be able to say that I'm here. There was times in the journey of becoming a mother that I almost lost my actual life. They tell you when you have a baby, you give birth, it's the closest to death that you'll ever be. And I'm a living witness once again that there's no lie. There's no lie. I had so many complications with my girls. My son was almost like the picture perfect pregnancy. But them girls, God bless my daughters. I love them. But those two pregnancies took a lot out of me. Just real quick before we get into this episode. First child, my very first daughter, I had the worst case of not being able to keep anything down. And there's a special word for it. Can't even say it. I can't even say it. But that word, it's like hypergravis something. You know what I mean. I'll put it in the show notes so you know what I'm talking about. But I had that where you couldn't keep anything down. I couldn't keep water down. My daughter was born 6 weeks early because, again, my weight was not, it wasn't like I was increasing my weight. Her weight wasn't really increasing. I had high blood pressure because I had preeclampsia. She ended up being born 6 weeks early. I was at a point of the doctor was like, listen, if we don't get this baby out, she's going to go into a seizure. We don't know what could happen. That was with the first child. It was so bad. I had to have a nurse come to my house 3 days a week. I had to have an IV that kept actually physically in my body that I would wear all every day to work and home. And they would come in and change it out every couple of days. Cause you know, you can't leave IVs in for so long. And so that's how I survived that first pregnancy. And then I had the second pregnancy. That was my son. And I was feeling like I was walking on sunshine, but then I ended up going through postpartum. So where I went and had this quote unquote picture perfect by the book pregnancy with him, I then doubled that with the postpartum. The third child, thank God, in my last, and let me just tell you, and I do mean my last, I told that doctor that if I come and have my husband's baby, I don't want to have his, my husband's baby, an alien's baby, no divine intervention, and if I want all their social security numbers, and they tied my tubes, and I made them put them in a container so I could see it. So I saw the tubes, they ain't that big, y'all, but I synced them, and I said, listen, if I come back, this can be y'all baby, because I'm not raising it, okay? But this third baby, I had a blood clot in my brain, like my actual brain, and it caused me to have to be on Lovenox, which is a shot. I know there's Lovenox that comes in a pill, but I could not take it. I had to have the shot, and I had to give that to myself two times a day. I ended up having some internal bleeding after I was discharged from the hospital, and I was in ICU for women and babies. So I was in the maternity ward ICU, and I was there for quite some time. And so when I tell you that I'm just grateful for life. Like, I'm grateful for life. And I share that with you because you may not want to have a child. This is not a, hey, have a baby thing. Like, let me keep this 100. With all of the three babies that I have, I promise you, I am the advocate for do what makes you feel good. So if a mother or a woman came up to me or a woman came up to me and said, child, I ain't ready. I don't want to have no children. You know what I'm going to say? Good for you. Girl, travel. Do your thing. Like, I'm not pushing this one way or the other. What I'm trying to tell you is that the worst of things that you can go through, you will come out, like the Bible say, like pure gold. You will come out on the other side, even though you feel like life has fallen from the very depths of your world. It will turn. It can and it will turn. So let's get into how this week has worked out and how this week just, I feel like this week worked out for me. I feel like I really have really triumphed and tried to get through this week with trying to manage working out. I'm planning to do the Broad Street Run on May 4th. It's a 10-mile run here in Philadelphia. So I have been pushing my, I feel like I've been pushing my body to the limit. And I don't know if anybody else that feels this way. It's like when you're in the middle of training for this, something such as this, this is not my first time doing it. A part of me is just reminding myself that in worst case scenario, one thing I know I will not do is that I will not fail. I will not fail. So even regardless of like me wanting to hit a certain time, I promise you, I will do all I can to get to that, to the front finish line, because there's nothing that I hate worse than starting to do something and then quitting. So one thing I keep telling myself, regardless, because there's some days like when you're in the midst of training, you'll go to run. And then because I've been running so often, it's like I go to run one day and then I don't feel like my body is just like, it's not working with me. I feel like it's working against me. And then I turn around the next time and it's like that never even happened. And I'm like, Lord, what happens if I go to run this race? I've done all the things. I've stretched. I've gotten my body together. And then I get to this race and my body does what it has done on some of these days where it feels like it's not with me. We're going to take that body with us to the finish line. That's what we're going to do. Because no matter what, I'm going to make it. I am going to absolutely make it. There is a song by Hezekiah Walker that was my solo in my choir. So in the youth choir, which my mother was the choir director, my father was the musician, the drummer. And the song is, I'll make it. Literally can't get no plainer than that. And in the words, it says, sink or swim, live or die, I'll make it. If I can't fly, then I'll run. And if I can't run, then I'll walk. But if I can't walk, then I'll crawl, but I'll make it. And that is the literally behind my whole thought process on this whole thing. Like, no matter what happens, I'm going to get through there. I'm going to get to that finish line so I can get to my tacos and my margarita. Now, for those who may not know, anytime I run a race, and especially a race to this magnitude, at the very end, here's the few things is my recovery program. I'm getting my behind in the shower. No, in the tub with some Epsom salt. I'm going to have me a glass of wine. I'm going to get myself together and get out of that tub. I'm going to put on some lazy, don't touch me clothes, don't be around me clothes. I'm going to put stuff on my legs to get my legs together. Like, you know, those little things that you be in the hospital and it kind of like massages your legs. I'm going to have that on. And then I'm going to have my taco and my margaritas for the rest of the day. That's it. And I'm going to be watching Netflix. That is how I recover. So that's what I'm going to be keeping in my mind outside of the song of I'm going to make it. I have no doubt. Even though I'm telling you, it literally has been fear coming on me, like different variations of different days. I went to visit my parents over the weekend because my dad had an unfortunate health scare. And they're like, we don't know what's going on. I'm like, okay, let's pack a bag. I was just in Lancaster. If you watched the last week's episode, I was just visiting my parents because my mother retired. And so we had a time. Kiki, it was like, great. I didn't take my kids, didn't take my husband, just me. My parents catered to me, even though it was supposed to be celebrating my mom. But, you know, moms is going to do what they're going to do. I get catered. I get to sleep in. I get to go to church. I get to do all these things without lifting fingers for little people and having to be a wife and mom. I take a little mental break. And I'm excited. Fast forward to this past weekend, my dad gets sick. Now I got to run back. I'm going to run back. Here is the thing that I've been learning as I've been getting older. And as I've been around, I talked about this last episode. So if you didn't listen to it, we talked about travel and wellness and what was happening on these TikTok streets, which we will get into for this week's TikTok foolishness. The one thing that I was talking about was the fact that like my husband lost his father. And the same day that my husband lost his father, one of my other friends lost their father on the same exact day. another friend of mine, his mother is dealing with cancer and unfortunately may have to go to hospice soon. All of these things are happening around me. I have another friend who's lost both her parents. With all these things happening around me, you know, sometimes as adults, we think about the things that our parents did or didn't do. And I could be lying. I would be lying to you if I didn't say I had thoughts about the things that my parents have done or didn't do. Because we all have, right? My kids will have the same regardless of how well I think I'm doing. My kids will have something to say about what I've done or didn't do. You can ask them now. They may say something. That's fine. But sometimes we allow the things that are happening to cloud us to the point where we're just like, I don't care. Now, hear me out. If you have a no contact in order because of the things that have happened, I'm not asking you to stop that no contact order in no way. I am asking for you to go to therapy and maybe heal so that whether you do talk or you don't talk, you can be at peace. Part of my healing journey.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Has been to talk about the things that I feel like has happened, whether it's my parents, it could be my old teacher, it could be an ex-boyfriend, like whatever is going on, the things that I've experienced in life. And the one thing that I promised myself is that, Lord, I may not be perfect in my healing process, but I am going to get to the point where stuff doesn't trigger me to the point where I feel like everything is out of control. And if you know what a trigger is, those are things that get underneath your skin. They move you in some type of way. And 9 times out of 10, when they move you, when it triggers you, it will trigger you to a negative thought. Now, that doesn't mean that whatever is true cannot still be true. Two things can be true. You could be dealing with something that was completely out of control, out of pocket, disrespectful, all the things. But the way you feel about it and how you're interacting with it or how you're verbalizing that or how it comes out, it matters. And in my healing journey, I'm learning to be very open about what it is that's bothering me. I'm being open to the people that have done it or now I won't say continue because I ain't letting that continue. But for when things happen, I'm dealing with them in real time in 3D. And instead of holding that stuff in to the point where I'm bitter, I'm upset, I'm this, I'm that, I'm learning, not have learned, but am learning how to not allow that to stop my joy, to stop my peace, to stop my progress to where, again, I'm walking myself backwards. Let me tell you how hard that is to do. It is extremely hard to look a person in your face, in their face as they look at you and remember all the things they said and did and show them love, even when they don't deserve it, it's hard. But I am a Christian. You may not be, you don't gotta be. For me, I think about the fact that there's 1,001 things I could tell you with just in this week that I've done that God probably should have been like, girl, go have several seats and don't come back up here praying to me no more, asking me for nothing. Like, don't come here even telling me you're happy. Don't say happy, hallelujah. Don't do none of that because you're not worthy. So I try to think about that. Now, let's keep it 100 as well. I understand that God gives me grace. And so it's, you know, I have to work on giving other people grace for the grace that I seek. But I also know that everybody don't be seeking grace. Everybody don't be seeking the right things. All I can do is focus on me. All I can do is focus on what my part and I played in it. And that's a strong difference from where I was years ago. Because in the midst of all this postpartum that I dealt with when I was having my babies, I feel like motherhood has triggered me. And this is why I say I'm not forcing nobody or saying, child, ain't I want to have no kids? Because listen, I love my babies, but if I would have thought about the emotional and mental weight that having children brings, I would have my kids, but I'm going to move a little differently in that. And here's why. For me, maybe I'm the only person on the planet by which having children could be a trigger. It's like if you have not had a father figure in your life, like my kids have the best of my husband when it comes to them, him being a father to them. But then me watching that sometimes, I'm like, Lord, am I being triggered by this? Because I do have a stepfather who did raise me as his own, but he wasn't there. Like when I think about the fact that like I was just there with my mom and my grandmother for almost 5 years and didn't have the love of a father that's like protecting me and making sure that I'm good and making sure like I have the basic needs. My kids don't have that. So when you see my husband be a good father, it can be like, you know, why wasn't I? Why? You know what I mean? You start going down this chunk tunnel of foolishness, but it's real because that's how you feel. And that could be a trigger. But for me, becoming a parent triggered me to the utmost. Cause now I have to be affectionate when I may struggle with that with a kid, right? I may have struggled with that, not feeling like, and my mom's been on this podcast. So don't need to be like, oh my God, I can't believe she said that. My mom has been on there. She talked about her inability to have that emotional intelligence. And that was a great podcast. And if you need to go back and watch that, go back and watch it and listen to it. Go listen to it. It's a good podcast. And that was for all the mothers and the people and children who never will get to hear their parents say that. And so growing and then having my own children, it was like, okay, I got to be affectionate. I got to be patient. You ever see on TikTok or like Instagram or like any social media where a child is pouring water or milk or juice or whatever in a cup? Mamas back then didn't allow us to do that. Cause if you spilled that cup and that juice or water or milk or anything fell on that floor, you was getting got. I don't really care. You was getting got because how dare you go in here and waste this juice, water, and milk when children are just learning how to do something. And therefore, when they're learning how to do something, it's going to come out wrong. But the patience to clean that mess up, watching a child spill a lot of juice, a lot of water, a lot of milk, and still having that patience, I didn't have that. I had to go to parenting classes. I'm not ashamed to say I went to parenting classes. The second I found out I was pregnant, it was the parenting classes I went because I was like, how am I supposed to bring this child into this world and not be able to have this level of patience that I know it's going to require and I know I don't got it. I had an apartment at the time. I had my degree. I had a C-A-R, A-P-T, J-O-B. I had all those things, but patience I lacked. So I went to parenting classes. And so if you need to go to parenting classes, go ahead and sign up. Go ahead and sign up because we're going to talk about this parenting thing a little later when we talk about TikTok, right? And this is not a parenting episode. This is not a parenting podcast. I'm just saying these are different things that I've learned and that have helped me in my own mental health and wellness because becoming a parent is triggering as hell. It is triggering. So don't be upset. Don't be mad. Don't be any of those things if you're discovering that same thing. And even if you decide to not have children, even in the midst of deciding that can be triggerish as well. And you don't want that. You don't want to have that trigger, but it does exist. It does exist. And so we just want to make sure that you just be honest about that. Just be honest. But can we switch gears and talk about Senator Cory Booker? That man deserves everything and then some. 25 hours, I believe, of him standing on that Senate floor. Standing in the gap for all of us, like literally all of us. I don't care what political party you belong to. He literally stood for all of us and talked about the atrocities that are happening right now under our current regime. And I am just so proud. Well, I'm so proud of him. I know my proudness won't, you know, it won't put a dent into the, you know, how everybody else is feeling, but I am proud of that. Because we don't have many of that. We don't have many things happening like that in the country. It's a lot, but he did what needed to be done. And he definitely said what needed to be said. And I am in awe. And if you know less about what Senator Cory Booker did and more about things like Shade Room or whatever the other one, Hollywood Unlocked, I need you to just change. I need you to add just a couple slices of get on some real news, get into some real things, get into some things that challenges you because you should understand and know in real time when he was actually on there speaking for 25 hours straight. I can't even talk to you for an hour without me like, you know, having to go to the bathroom, having to go do this. And that man stood his ground for the people, for all people. No matter what color of people you are, what type of people you are, what you identify as, he stood for everyone. We have two Pennsylvania senators, one being John Fetterman, okay? One being John Fetterman for Democrat, and then we have Dave McCormick as a Republican senator. Where was they at? Were they holding up the bloodstained banner? Who's speaking for us? John Fetterman has been one of the most disappointing of all, and I do mean of all, of the senators that I've ever seen. And I'm just going to say he had such great potential. I think he was, I don't even know if he's a real Democrat at this point, the way he moves. I honestly believe he just got in there just to do whatever, and he's just like a disappointment. I don't know anybody who does like him. I don't know anybody who does like him. But those are two Pennsylvania senators. Where were they at? What have they done since everything has happened? Where have they been? I haven't seen, heard, outside of foolishness, I haven't seen or heard nothing. And if you didn't, if you live in Pennsylvania, didn't know those were our two Pennsylvania senators, this is why research is fundamental. Research is fundamental. Because we have two Pennsylvania ones and we ain't heard nothing from them. I ain't really seen no movement at all. And so you got to question politicians. And if you're trying to say, well, what should you do? Get in contact with those same politicians and ask them why. Because I plan to send a letter. I plan to call. I sure do. And you have the power to do so as well. You can. You actually can. You absolutely can. Okay? You can. Another conversation I would love to have on this particular episode is learning to trust the process. Now, when you're talking about learning to trust the process, a lot of times it's something that we visually see. Like, for instance, I've seen people go on TikTok and other social media apps. They're putting on makeup and you're like, baby, where are we going with this? Because it's giving cake. It's giving cakes, right? And it's like, okay, if you just trust the process. Now, don't get it to twist it. You can trust the process and it can go awry. I've seen people say trust the process and they still look like a Casper the Friendly Ghost cast, okay? But I've also seen it where you have to trust the process, and where it was looking real casty, real ghostly, it turned out to be some of the best makeup things I've ever seen. And that's just up on makeup. But trusting the process in your own life when you feel like anything and everybody or everybody and everything has gone left, or you feel like anything and everybody ain't really doing what they need to be doing, and you look and you're like, what the heck is happening here? I've had those moments. I've had those moments in this year. Like, God really be testing, like, sometimes if you don't let somebody out of your life, if you don't stop somebody from being as active as they are in your life, and God told you to let them out of your life and you don't, God allow all kinds of things to happen. So you'll be like, you know what, Lord, I know for a surety that I can't go back to that. That's like if you're dating the wrong person. You're dating them, they break your heart, they cheating on you, you take them back. They cheat on you again, you take them back. But then something will happen where it's so bad and it's so public and it's so heartbreaking and it's so many things. You be like, you know what? If I do this, this will be a shame unto me and everybody that knows me. Don't let it get that bad. Like, actually trust the process. I have seen the separation in my own personal life with friends, colleagues, people in the field. In the field of media, in the field of all different things, I have seen them tables turn. My God, I've seen those tables turn. In the beginning, I was like, oh my God, what? I didn't even do anything. Oh, I should call. God was putting right in my spirit, don't say nothing, don't call, don't do nothing. Just let it play itself out. And let me just say, it has played itself out. I probably will never be friendly with these people. Some people who were very close to me, I probably will never be as friendly. That's just where we're at. And am I trying to change it? Nah, I'm trusting the process. Because whatever I quote unquote lose, I will still gain. I feel like I can't really ever lose. I feel like I can't lose because even when it looks like I lose, I still win. And whatever I feel like I've lost will always come back. It's going to come back in a better version of itself. It's going to come back. And why? Because I'm doing the work too. It ain't just popping out the sky and just things are happening. Like, I'm doing the work. Because I'm doing the work, it makes sense. And it's crazy because my kids are picking up on it as well. Now, I'm not one of those parents that have adult conversations in front of my kids. And what does that mean for me? Because everybody got their own definition. And so, yes, as we trust the process, again, I can't say this enough. So many times we want to throw in the towel. And the towel be so heavy, it's like, let's go ahead and throw it. Throw the towel, we're done, wrap this up by noon. But I do know that in so many times that while you want to throw in the towel, the very thing that you want to throw the towel in for has a way of just turning itself around. And I'm grateful for the times I didn't. There's been times I have, but I'm grateful for the times that it didn't. One of the things I want to talk about is things that be happening in these internet streets. And I said this wasn't going to be a parent podcast, and it's not. However, I do want to talk about something that I did see with a mom on TikTok. There is a woman who is 26 years old with 6.5 children. Now you may say, Toy, what in the world is a half? She is pregnant with her 7th child. So she has 6 children, and then she is pregnant with her child. So that's 6.5. She's 26 years old. I can't say that I am pro-choice and then say something about the fact that she made the decision to have those 6 kids because they're here already. My issue isn't with the fact, well, it's not just in the fact that she had these 6 because, again, her body, her choice. My issue is in how she brought these children here, the reason she brought them here, and what she's doing now that they're here. 6.5 children, she says she did not have love growing up, and she had these children so that they would love her. That has to be one of the most selfish things that you could do to bring a child into the earth and then make them be the love you seek when you need to be seeking that from yourself. And that opened up a can of worms on TikTok. Because it's like, okay, how many kids did you need to have before you could wrap this up by noon and not put your body and your life and all the things? Listen, I don't know too many people who have multiple kids and can truly afford them, especially when you have 6 or more. Like I have my 3 and I can almost guarantee you if I would have had just one more, I too would have to be finding myself on a pole at this point. I would have to find myself on a pole because all of our kids are in private school. All of them are in extracurricular activities. And I know the privilege in being able to say that because there's so many people who love their kids, who are trying to do their best, but they cannot afford that. So I don't take it lightly that I'm able to provide that, my husband and I. But here's the kicker. My mother always taught me, never have 2 more kids than you're willing to take care of, meaning the kids that I would be willing to take care of. Don't have no more than you are willing to take care of. Because my mom told me when I got engaged, listen, you can get engaged and you can be married and you can also be single at any given moment. So make sure that any decision you make is the decision you stand on because anything could happen. But being 26 years old with 6.5 children, it's got to be diabolical. And the reasoning is so that somebody could love you is selfish. There's no other way around it. I know so many people have justified it and they're like, you're judging her. Everybody wants to use the word judgment for being able to call out lack of accountability, for being able to call out the fact that there was no self-control and there's all kinds of things going on. So here's the thing. If your use of judgment is you're causing yourself to bypass a certain part of this situation, I don't understand. There's nothing we could do about these 6.5 kids. They're here. One's on the way and the other 6 are here. My problem is she brought these beautiful babies into this world to love her. And then she's recording a video of her cussing these beautiful babies out first thing in the morning as they wake up. Ma'am, you recorded and took your phone, angled it so that the world could see you cuss your kids out. But these are the babies you brought here to love for love you. So I guess while they were loving you, you didn't need to love them. You didn't need to show them decency, kindness, and respect. Now, please don't hit me with the, oh, well, you know, we don't know what them kids been doing and kids be acting up. I have 3. I said that from the very beginning. I'm the mother of 3. My kids are good kids, but listen, all kids be trying you. But cussing them out first thing in the morning, cussing them out. I've never taken well, even as a kid. watching adults cuss their kids out. Like, you know, you just be in a store and you hear somebody cussing, I mean, cussing them babies out. And you look and you're like, what in the five hills is happening? I've never been a fan of it. Never been a fan of it. And so I'm just distraught by the fact that these kids that she brought into this world to love her, she don't even love them. And if you hit me with the provision, she's doing her best. She's taking care of certain things. She's doing this and she's doing that. She's trying her best. I can't say she's not trying her best. I can say that she's going to have to get on somebody's do better. I am going to say that we have now, and I say we as a people have now made it easy, fun, inviting for the raggedies of people to come on social media and make a living off of foolery. You got the resilient Jenkins living in a hotel. Now they've been in 16, 17, 18, 19 days. They had a home that they were living in and one bedroom apartment that belonged to the man and his one son. Now you got seven people living in the house together. And at the time, they also had two cats. They put the cats out. They get evicted, even though they're making mad money on social media. And here's the thing. My mother always taught me this too. Pay your rent or your mortgage, wherever your head is laid out, and make sure you take care and pay your sitter so you can go to work. Now, neither one of these resilient chicken parents are working. He got kids outside of there. So she got, let me see, one, two, three kids. Then he has a fourth. Then they had one together. And then he has another kid. It's too many kids. It's like too many kids. I need us to stop high-fiving foolishness so that people like the resilient Jenkins can go ahead and get a real job and stop depending on the internet to beg and make a GoFundMe for every little thing. I need the mother of the 26-year-old mother to go ahead and get some parenting classes so she can establish some patience, so she can learn how to talk to her children, so she can grow them up so they can learn. I know married people and single people with a gaggle of kids they can't afford to take care of. And I know some of them got mad. There's a couple I know personally. I don't care that you're mad. If you're mad, get a cape and be super mad. Because I said what I said and I'm not taking it back. This is not about judgment. This is about practicality. Nobody in the year of our Lord, 2025, can afford to feed 7-8 kids. Not in this economy. Not in this economy. Please show me the parent. Excuse me for that. But please show me the parent that has 7-8 kids. And nobody's getting assistance and they're taking care of them. Because it's very limited people who can do that. And I do mean very limited people. Here's another argument that me and other people were talking about online. Is the mom who has no job a stay-at-home mom, or is she just an unemployed mom? Is it a stay-at-home mom if you don't work, you're in the home taking care of your family, but you have no other income that's supporting, meaning you don't have like a husband that takes care, you know, of all the things while you're home managing the household? Are we stay-at-home moms if we're unemployed? Not because we have a husband or some other form of income, but are you a stay-at-home mom if you had no job? Because there are some women I remember so vividly. I was in junior high, and by the ninth grade, I knew a girl who had three kids by the ninth grade. I'm talking about three children by the ninth grade. Okay? The ninth grade. So we're talking about 14, 15 tops, and you already had three kids? I'm like, what did you do? Get your period at 12 and have a kid every year? Because what's happening here? But it does happen. But folks can't afford to have that many kids and have them in their own room and space, or at least have them in spacing where there's not four kids to a room, where girls and boys don't have to share a room because you don't have enough space to put them in their own space. And like the resilient Jenkins, you have your kids laying in the kitchen, the same place that you also cook, because you want to be in the bedroom, but you leave your kids in the living room and on the floor and by the door and by a window and all this other stuff. That's just crazy to me. 100% just loony to me. But we have normalized this. We are normalizing women and families. Not even got to be women or men. It's just people in general coming online and showing you their nasty houses. I'm not talking about those reset videos. I absolutely love those reset videos. them Sunday resets where they're like, listen, life be life and we finna get up. We're going to clean up and put some stuff. And you can clearly see that their house is normally clean. They just, life is life. In a couple days, you know, you come in the house like my house right now. I got to go and clean that up. Because as soon as you come in the living room, you can see, okay, you got to put the shoes up. Y'all got to run the vacuum. Stuff like that. But we're not talking about stuff as in disarray. We're talking about stuff being out of control. We have normalized it where it's okay for stuff to be just everywhere. Your house is show enough nasty. Where your white walls are supposed to be white, they're black. Where your counters are supposed to be white, they're black. Where you can see shoes and food underneath sticking out on the kitchen floor. And y'all are just hitting recording and uploading these things. See, here's the thing. Nothing can get uploaded by accident. So the fact that you recorded it, thought you had the good angle, and then threw it on the internet like, bam, watch me, look at me, something wrong. I remember somebody that I actually know in real life, no lie, content creator or at least a budding content creator, whatever the case may be, right? Making food on a stove where you could see the food on the stove had been on there for many moons ago, many months ago, many weeks ago, many days ago. And you are here trying to show us how to cook, but you couldn't even clean up the space. We're not talking about while you were cooking, you made us mess. We're talking about the mess was already there. It's in the room with us. It's in the room with us. And we're like, ma'am, no, absolutely not. Because now I'm not even watching what you're cooking. I'm looking at the stove like, she don't see that. She don't see me seeing her see that. Because when you record and you're a content creator, if you're a smart content creator, you go back and watch what you did. Maybe I'm the only one. Yeah, I go back and I see what I did. I look at everything. Okay, let me see everything good. Okay, do I need to cut the video here and splice it here? Because that matters. Okay? We have just normalized this stuff. It's so normal. Every day you go in there, you see somebody just doing the absolute most. The house is nasty. They show up online. They ain't washed the kids. The kids dirty. They just show up online. They know they ain't sitting there about to be evicted out of their house. They're about to be evicted out the hotel that they're in. They just show up and post it. Just show up and post it. Show up and post it. Listen, I know they say everything is content. I know they're saying that. I know they're telling you that. I'm almost going to tell you that everything ain't content. Everything is not content. For instance, I have started to like really make videos on YouTube. I went to church with my parent, well, my mom for 2 weeks in a row. Because again, I went up there last week and then I had to go up again the week. Well, I went the week before and then I had to go again this past weekend. When my mom was praying and there were people at the altar this past weekend, I turned the camera to me so you could hear my mother's prayer without disrespecting the people that may not want nobody to know they was up there getting prayer. And here's the kicker. Everybody that was up there for prayer was turned away from the camera, but out of respect that somebody could recognize somebody that may have been up there. I didn't show them people getting up there for prayer. Because that's an intimate moment. That's a vulnerable moment. This ain't no Marvin Sapp, right? Close the doors. And it's not that. When people are in the midst of prayer asking God for whatever it is they're asking, I didn't point that camera to them. You know why? Because everything ain't content. Everything is not content. Everything is not content. And quiet as it's kept, you might be like, well, you shouldn't even been recording at all. And I would say, you know what? You kind of might be right. But I chose to make sure that anything that I did show was showing me and not anybody else. Because again, everything ain't content. When my brother sang the week before, I did record him. But my brother is also a singer and always posts his videos. So it was cool. But I'm not out there recording the people up at the line getting prayer. That's why I never liked when people start posting people when they're in the prayer and they're like confessing things and then it goes online. And I'm like, why are you posting this? Because we need to have some decorum. So yes, to that mother that is 26 years old with 6.5 kids, ain't nothing I can do about them babies. They're here now. But what are you going to do now that they are here? Are you going to find a way to give them better than what you have? And it's going to start with how you talk to them, how you treat them, all the things. It's not enough to bring them here and feed them. I get so fed up and tired of hearing y'all talk about, I take care of my babies. I make sure they eat. You're supposed to do that. When you lay down with Brum Man and them and you had that baby, the basics was to feed them, clothe them, and keep them clean and put a roof over their head. You don't get no banner, no high five, no glory crown, or nothing else for doing your job. Because you want to have a child, you got to do the bare bone basics. I can't stand that I fed my kids. They're fed. They're not hungry. They have a roof over their head. They have somewhere to sleep. Stop using that as your excuse, because parenting and provision are part of it. It's not the only part. It's not the only part. Some of y'all are so stuck on y'all provision that you don't know that. But your kids do. They know you don't do it. They know all you do is going to give them something to eat and put the bare bone basis, give them a pair of shoes or something. Stop. Stop with that I feed my kids stuff, because you're supposed to feed them. Who else is supposed to be feeding them? Aquinas has kept all these social services that we have. We're not even supposed to have them. We're supposed to be doing what we're supposed to be doing to take care of ourselves. Now, I came from a parent who was on food stamps, but my mother always said, listen, this ain't the end all be all. We got to get on somebody's do better. You don't never get here and stay here. You get up off these things. You don't get dependent upon these things. And she didn't. She got up off of there. She did what had to be done. So if you need it as a temporary means, hey, do you. But if you need it to live off of, child, no, absolutely not. However, just because I feel that way, I'm not going to be like the Republicans that I know that's going to be like, cut everybody, cut the grandmas off from Medicaid, cut off this and cut off that. No, there's a way to do it, decent and in order. You ain't got to be raggedy when you do something. But what I will say is this. That mother has got to get, I pray all the time. Like every time her video comes showing up on my thing, like, Lord, please get this woman together. Somebody mentor this young woman. Maybe she's be willing to be mentored something so those babies stand a chance. Because outside of that, having a child just because you want somebody to love you is diabolical. It is selfish. It won't produce the result you think it is, because 9 times out of 10, when them type of kids grow up, they go the furthest away from their family. They go to the college that's almost you need 2-3 planes to get to. They will not call home. They will go no contact. They will do all kinds of things because ain't none of that stuff cute. Ain't none of that stuff cute. My mother had me at 18. I said, I'm not having no kid at nobody's 18. My first child I had at 28, and everybody still treated me as if I was the worst child and the worst person in the whole nation. I had my first child at 28, a next child at 30, and I believe the next one at like 32, 33. I think I was, my 33rd year. So, yeah, I wanted to do better. My mother was aspiring to go to school. I made sure that I graduated from college. I hope my kids go to get their masters, they become lawyers, whatever. Listen, I don't have this thing where they got to become certain things, but whatever they become, do the best at it. But some of the things that my mother did, I made sure, my mother made sure. She talked to me about there's better than this. There's more than this. There's more than just this. Don't do this that I'm doing or I did. Don't do it. And so I can't say I made every decision right, but what I can say on some of the major decisions, it was very abundantly clear. Do not get pregnant at 18. Do not do it. Because raising a child when you're still a child yourself, and listen, I know we want to tell ourselves that we're 18 and so the state or the government recognizes us as adults. Yeah, that's great. But in real life, y'all not really grown until you can pay for everything you do. And that means your mistakes and everything else. When you can cover yourself like that without nobody's help, then you can call yourself grown. Even at 18, if you're still on your mommy and daddy's cell phone plan, you ain't grown. You're an adult, but you are not grown. Grown is when you can take care of the things, when you can find legal ways to take care of the things that need to be taken care of without the help of other people. And that's not to say that you can't get and need help from other people, but you better be able to handle things by yourself. That's when you're really grown. I do pray that although she is an adult, that somebody will help her to become a grown woman, a grown mother who can really do what needs to be done and can show her kids, have the conversations, and not in a scary, you're going to go to hell way, but literally just say, hey, these are the things that I did and here's the way you're going to want to avoid it. When I started going to school, my mom told me from the gate, education is going to be your key up out of here. And I listened to it. She said, listen, get good grades and you can go anywhere. She wasn't lying. I got straight A's from the second grade on. I had so many schools that I had gotten accepted to and got great scholarships. I just chose to go to Penn State because I liked it. I had already attended the school there by staying there the summer before. I really enjoyed it. It was a big enough school for me to be my own person, learn my own identity, be close enough for my parents to get me, but not close enough for them to roll up on me. That's literally how I made my decision. If you're wondering, like, why would I could have went to Dickinson Law, I could have went to, I mean, Dickinson School and then went to law school. I could have done all kind of different things. I chose to go to Penn State for the very reasons I just listed. And I literally, that's how I wrote it down. I was like, okay, it's closed. They can get me in an emergency, but they can't just be like, hey, we was in a neighborhood type situation, right? Yeah. Because if I had to fly somewhere to get to my parents, I might not have come home. Because who has money to fly? I was a broke college student. I didn't have money to be flying home every week. But I could get home via the train for like $30. If I needed to, most of the time. My freshman year, my parents got me for everything. They picked me up for everything. If I came my freshman year, they picked me up. So I was, you know, I was living good. So freshman year, they picked me up for everything. By sophomore year, they was like, here, you know what? You should like look at the bus schedule and the train schedule. And I did, and I enjoyed it. Junior year, I believe for the first half, I was still going home via my, between my parents or the bus or the train. And then that senior year, I had a car. Senior year, I was a car. I could drive myself back home, and I did when I needed to, and I drove myself back. Ended up getting a ticket when I actually just bought the car. The weekend I bought the car, I got a ticket. Fought the ticket and won too. God is good. But what I'm saying to you is that we got to want and teach our kids better, because that's the only way we can prevent and uplift our kids to make sure they don't make the good decisions or the bad decisions that we did. Let me just say this. I've had very, very plain, blunt conversations with my kids, and especially my oldest, who will transition to being an adult. She won't be grown yet, but she'll at least be an adult soon. And in that process of her becoming an adult, I always let her know, listen, when you turn 18, you're going to feel like you're grown. You're going to do it. Ain't even no sense of trying to sugarcoat this thing. But while you're not yet grown, you're going to make mistakes that everybody else has made before you. I've made the same mistakes. But the best thing you could do is learn from everybody else's mistakes, so you don't got to go through the same thing we all went through. And one thing she will know, and the rest of my two children, other two children will know, is that in the midst of whatever mistake you're in, I'm not going to turn my back on you. I may not like what you're doing. I may not like what you're doing and how you're doing it and who you're doing it with, but I will not turn my back on you. You will feel the love and support from me and your father. You will feel it. Now, that may come with some things where I have to say, listen, I got to bow out a little bit, but I'm going to be here for you. I can't just put money behind certain things. That may happen, but my love for my child and the rest of the other two children will remain steadfast, because there's nothing like going through the worst of your life when you thought you was grown, you make a decision and you are completely shut out. That is a feeling I don't want my kids to feel, because you don't got to, you can not like what they're doing. You cannot like what they're saying without making them feel like they have gone, like the lights have gone black. Now here in the midst of that, because I know some of my PK people is like, well, when you go God, when you're going in the midst of black, you know, that's when you get into God and you know that God's going to be there to be with you. Yes. But he also sent me as a mother to make sure that I am the upstanding mother that I can be. And I can't call myself an upstanding mother and turn my back completely on my child because I don't like what they're saying or what they're doing. And I've already been praying like, God, please help me, because I know I'm going to get tested on that, because kids, as they start to become adults and they start to think that they're grown, will do the things that they don't have no business doing. You know how I know that? Because I did it. I did it, but I also was sneaky about it. And I also was sneaky about it because I knew I couldn't come home and say certain things. I knew I couldn't tell my mom the real about something that's going on without, not even just about hearing her complain about or being mad about it, because I knew that they would then turn their back. If I didn't say or do the right things, they would have turned their back on me. I can't sugarcoat it, because people who know me in real life, if I got up here and lied, they'd be like, now Toy. Now, you know, you was lying on that part and I ain't going to lie. My parents would have turned their back. The parents that I had back then, they would have turned their back. Now, the parents I have now, they are new parents. My parents are new parents right now. They're supportive right now. They were not supportive back then. And sometimes they'd be struggling with some things right now, but definitely back then, no way I could have been honest. I could never have been honest and say, hey, mom, guess what? You know what? I decided that I didn't want to be a virgin. I decided to give my virginity to, it just happened to be my husband, because my husband was my first. And we went to, in case you didn't catch on, we went to Penn State together. And I could never come home and tell my parents that. So I lied about, oh no, I'm still a virgin. Child, I don't want my daughter to lie to me. Because at some point, she's going to make the decision to do what she's going to do. Why lie? You know why you lie? Because you know the consequence, and or you know that your parent or parents or the person that's supposed to be supporting you will not. And that's a hurtful thing, to not feel supported.
I don't want my child to lie to me just because she thinks I'm not going to support her. Because guess what? I'm going to support. Now I may be like, girl, now I know you knew better. But at that point, I'm going to support. Because what's done is done. I want to support. I want to guide them so they can try to make good decisions. I've been trying to get my daughter to look at some of these things. I love seeing some of these women that's living that good, soft life. You know, they went to school, they're doing what they need to do. They find their first luxury apartment. They're paying their bills. They're taking girls trips. They got their little poodle dog if that's what they want. Like, I want that for my child. All three of them, quite honest with you, all three of them. I want that for them. The only reason why I keep saying that my child is because I have the one that's about to turn 18. But I want that for them. I want them to start off from the gate, like go out there and win. Go out there and win and do it without having somebody having to pay for it. Like, do it without, like, my daughter's not having to have their first time having their luxury apartment is because they're coupled with another person. Like, I want them to do it on their own. I want them to know they can handle it. I want them to live within their means, because luxury may mean one thing to you and mean something to somebody else. So live within your means. But I want that for them. I want them to be able to say, I got a passport, we're traveling, and that the first time they don't travel is, or the first time they are traveling is with a significant other. Now, you may take me on certain trips. This is why I don't want my daughters thinking that your son taking them to Vegas is the best thing since sliced bread, because they ain't already been some places. Like, that's what I want for them. I want my son to know how to treat a young lady when he starts to date them, that one, he don't get caught up in just treating everybody because they patted the eyes, because a lot of them going back to the eyes and they ain't no good. But I want him to understand and use discernment about when he finds one that's decent and you treat that woman with respect. Because that's somebody's daughter. Just like I want somebody's daughter to treat my son with decency and respect, because that's somebody's son and I just happen to be the mother of. And I fight. But I'm going to fight for my daughters too. See, I'm not one of those moms, them boy moms that's like, not my son, Jesus. No, my son. No, no, no. My son and my daughters. I fight for both. I want them to both to come out the door knowing how to cook for them, how to, for themselves, how to take care of themselves, how to do all these different things. But I want to show grace. Because how could I not show grace to my own kids? Do you know how many people watch their parents show more love and concern and grace to other people that won't show it to their own? That's not the type of parent I want to be. That's not the type of legacy that I want to lead. Because that's the type of legacy that you lead when people can say, you know what, my mom was, she was cool, but she was this. She ain't never did this for me. She ain't never, I don't want that legacy. I want them to say, man, my mom did not play about the stuff that she didn't agree with, but she was always in my corner. That's what my legacy, that's what I want to leave. Because whatever I do for my kids or don't do for my kids or don't support in my kids, I set that standard up for my grandkids. See, some of y'all haven't caught that little nugget. If you want to have kids, the way that you treat your kid is the same way that they may internalize and treat your grandkids. And some of y'all be coming out the woodworks, all of a sudden you treating your grandkids with all this greatness. And some of y'all keep playing that favoritism too. But we don't want to talk about that. But the other part of it is that however I treat my kids, they have that same potential to treat my grandkids. And I wouldn't want my grandkids to be talked to any old type of way. I wouldn't want my grandkids to feel like they weren't supported. I don't want my grandkids to go looking for love because I was so rude and mean to them because I'm the parent and I beat my chest because I'm grown and you're not. No. Whatever I do to my kids, I want them to repeat it to my grandkids, but I want whatever they're repeating to be right. When you wake your child up, you say good morning. Not you son of a, like the mother, the 26-year-old mother with the 6.5 kids does. I don't want to say, get your raggedy, no good. No, I don't want that. Hey, get your towel down here. Or, hey, I need to talk to you. Or, hey, what's going on? Something better than that. I want better for my grandkids. So I'm going to do to my kids what I want them to do with my grandkids. And they may not even have a grandchild. That's fine too. But should they do, I want them to know the example of how to treat their children by the way that I have treated them. Because we all are deserving grace. And how you extend that grace is to consider somebody else's shoes. Stand in somebody else's shoes when you can give them grace. If I was 26 years old with 6.5 kids, I would want somebody to take me underneath their wings and show me a better way. Because I love my kids enough, I may not be able to see that enough to do it right. And that could very well be her thing. That's why I say, I pray she's open to somebody mentoring her. I pray she's open to receiving parenting classes, because let me just say, I had to take parenting classes and I'm not ashamed to say that I did, because I want it better for my own kids. So, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope there was something that you got from this. Because again, this wasn't about being a parent, child. You don't have to be no parent to understand principle. You've had a parent. If you came on this earth, you've had a parent. What if you say, okay, I didn't get to know my parent, but my parents put me in foster care. That alone is a trigger enough. That alone brings its own level of trigger. That alone brings a level of like thought processes about how you're going to do or what you're choosing to do in your life and how you're going to treat other people who come in and out of your life. That alone. So trust me, you can't come at me any angle where I would not be able to say, but here's the principle of that. So I hope that we are extending grace again. I don't have any ill will toward that mother. How can I have an ill will toward somebody I don't know? That woman will never see me. I'll never see her. Right? But at the end of the day, I pray she's open enough to receive somebody mentoring her for her to use that to be a better parent. Because those children don't deserve to be in poverty. No child wants to grow up in poverty. Most kids, when they grow up in poverty, they get made fun of at school. I know friends who were like that as I grew up. Their parents couldn't do nothing for them, man. And let me tell you, it shows. It showed in everything that they did, everything they said, and just how they lived and how they looked. And the lack of confidence that they had in themselves. And they didn't feel pretty enough. And so they gravitated towards the wrong thing. All right, so it is the weekend. Find one activity that you love. Pour into yourself. One activity. You can do more than one. I'm encouraging you to do more than one, but if you can't do more than one, find one activity that just makes your soul feel happy. It doesn't have to be major, doesn't have to be expensive, just one thing. In the midst of that, I want you to have a good week because we will be back, of course, next week for Conversations with Toy. I want to thank you so much for rocking out and the support that you have been giving me over these years. I think this is our third year. I got to look. I got to figure out where we are with this. But I am Toy, your podcaster, and this is Conversations with Toy.
Thank you as always for joining me. And I know that even in the deepest or joyful conversations, that there's something we can learn and apply. Until next time, I hope that you are doing better. If not, we will be back to talk some more and handle it. Peace to you and yours. Stay grounded.